Welcome to the Queer Arabs podcast. This is Alia.
This is Nadia.
And this is Ellie.
And hi again.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah,
We didn't mean to ditch this. We've just been occupied with a lot of other
Life.
projects. So
Yeah.
I miss you all.
Yeah, definitely miss this. I was getting sad about it yesterday, and then was it this morning? Nadia, you said, hey, maybe the podcast should be a
I was like,
thing.
hey, you know our podcast? Maybe we
And I
should
was
do
like,
it sometime.
yeah, and I said, oh, I've been sad about that. Or I was sad about that yesterday, and then we are here.
Here we
So,
are.
hi.
It's like it just proves it's just that easy. Message,
Yeah.
talk to somebody.
It's true. I mean, normally it's a bit harder because we have guests. So
Yeah.
it's not quite so easy to schedule things with people. But we I'm not making any timeline promises, but we will have other podcasts
Yeah,
eventually.
we're not done
Yeah.
at all. So what do we want to start with? We're not gonna edit this episode at all.
Unless we say something terrible.
Yeah. In which
I'll
case,
start.
you'll never know.
True.
Unless it's like a really bad edit. I'd like to start by talking about this play I just went to, which was incredible. Unfortunately, I can't tell you to go see it because this was the last show of the run.
Okay.
But I'm gonna read out everybody's name so I make sure I credit everybody. It was between Fidazi Dunn from Palestine, John Rothomack from Uganda, Alexandra Aaron, who's a producer here, Junaid Saradin from Lebanon, and an additional writer was Asimwe Deborah Kawe. Apologies if I said anybody's name incorrectly. But it was basically about the intersections between Palestinian and Ugandan history through like the lens of prisons and the prison system. Also the UK prison system, because both of those places are British colonized, so the prisons there are British products as well. But yeah, basically kind of looking at the intersections between those histories as they relate to British colonialism, both places, Zionism, in that like Uganda was also a place where the Zionist project was proposed. And then other points of intersection between like political movement or people moving between those. And how it kind of went was they would go to like different points in the timeline, and then they would do like a hypothetical situation where they would be like hypothetical Palestinian and Ugandan people at that point in time and imagine like how they would meet. And in every situation, there would be a prison involved. So yeah, there was just different scenarios. One, like there would be times where they're getting arrested as political prisoners. There was a situation in which like the Palestinian character was arrested in Uganda for like queer stuff. And one in which like they were in the UK and the Ugandan man was like just a person in prison for like random shit because of the racist prison system, and the other character was like informing him that his daughter was killed protesting in Palestine. Various situations basically. But yeah, really kind of very like emotionally moving, partially but just because the actors were really good and had a really incredible connection with each other. And yeah, would highly recommend checking out their work in the future if you have the opportunity to do that.
I'm glad that the prison discussion is an ongoing thing. This is like I maybe this is just like my personal bubble, but I've been seeing a lot of works based like around the intersection of race, nationality, and sexual orientation in prisons. And yeah, that just like, oh wow, that's another one. So.
Yeah, I mean, and it also just kind of like made me, I mean, I won't say too many specifics, but it made me think about like my family's relationship with the prison system in Lebanon, mostly, not so much in this country, but also just like a lot of people being put in jail here recently, with the protests and yeah, lots of prisons everywhere.
Speaking of the protests here,
Yeah. Yeah, have there been a lot in Houston?
I know I've been basically watching them remotely because of all my friends posting about them. So they're pretty far from where I'm at right now, but I want to go. But I'm also like, you know what? Maybe I should just go to the next one.
Yeah,
But yeah,
but
it seems to be like ongoing, and I'm pretty happy to see it ongoing. But for me,
yeah.
I always question, I don't even
It's
want to talk
far.
about really questioning about the efficacy of a protest, just because if it wasn't effective, no one would be being arrested.
Right.
So, but. Because of that, we're seeing a whole bunch of BDS, anti-BDS and divestment and even like protest aid laws. Like there was some discussion about putting in laws in place to prevent people from donating for bail on these sort of things.
Jesus.
What?
Yeah.
So, for those who aren't keeping up with the whole giving money part of the side of the things, because of the whole Columbia and other university protests becoming a thing and arrests being anticipated, a lot of people set up bail funds. And depending on whether or not the prosecutor's office even wants to take it, like putting people in jail because they're protesting is one way to dissuade them from protesting. But if there's bail funds, that sort of takes a lot of the bite out of that. And that raises all sorts of constitutional issues, which law nerds can go on at length for me elsewhere. But the main one is this: it's like if you're arrested and you're bailed out and back on the street protesting again, is that dissuading you? Yeah, protesting, or sorry, not protesting, getting arrested is pretty horrific in itself, depending on, the local cop situation. But it also comes back to, is the jail the punishment in itself? Do the cops actually intend to prosecute? And do they have a record of prosecuting? That's sort of the thing with it,
Yeah.
And
Are the
different.
I'm curious what the actual like are the universities in Houston, are there a lot of encampments there in Texas? I'm not entirely up on the whole national situation.
I know it's going, I know it like University of Texas, I think, was having some, but not in,
Yeah.
I don't think they were like, I don't think it was big enough in Houston to make the news. But the United States news situation has been pretty weird. Like, there's a lot of attempts to cast the protest as like violent and, outside agitators. And I'm like seeing some of this stuff like show up
I'm one of the
on news.
outside agitators. Can confirm, like, mostly I provide choreography.
You know what? I'm showing up to the next protest I go to. I'm wearing my outside agitator shirt.
Yeah. I do want to like shout out the New York schools, because at this point, well, now the new school has opened up a faculty one after all the student ones in the city got shut down. But I was at several of them, and I just want to like shout out that the students did a great job. Like for all, so with credit to us as people who are adults that are older than the average college student and try to organize people who are the same, college students are an easier group to mobilize. However, I just do feel like we can learn a lot from, honestly, the way they just figured shit out, right? Like, I feel like there's a lot of hand-wringing of like, oh, I'm not qualified to do this, especially like I work in kind of a nonprofit advocacy space where there's so much about like qualifications and do you have the right consultants and do we have the whatever? And I don't know. Like I was at, especially like FIT is standing out to me because it was kind of a small, it's a smaller school. So therefore a smaller encampment group, the way they just like figured out how to fucking divide labor, and they're like, okay, who can look through data and figure out the number shit? And then what do we need for that? Okay, we need like one professor who's like down. Who can find that person? How are we gonna like get food and do laundry? How are we gonna organize escalation? You know, like just whatever needed to be done, they figured out how to do it and divide labor, and also creating like community spaces and creative spaces, and like a lot of the encampments were bringing in artists either from the school or from the pool of outside agitators to like perform or lead workshops. And I don't know, I feel like in some of the spaces I'm in, there's just so much up in the books theoretical stuff about like, oh, art is resistance and healing is part of whatever, without a lot of actual integration between those things and like direct action. And I thought the students just integrated that by just fucking doing it. So props to them. I was there when I was at CUNY when it kind of the cops went at it, and FIT, although I left before, they really shut that one down. And yeah, what the NYPD did was disgusting. Also, I just want to note, like, the public school students are getting the worst charges. Like the CUNY kids got, or not kids, some of them, well, they're all mostly, or they are technically adults, even if they're undergrads. There's also grad students involved. But CUNY students were getting like felonies, while Columbia students were getting misdemeanors. So it's just it's the criminal injustice system working as it does in general. But yeah, I think like even beyond like the media, mainstream media, like false narratives of, oh, this is like violent and anti-Semitic and it's funded by big Hamas and whatever. I think also when I see like people in my position or our position just trying to find like reasons to criticize these encampments, I think it's fair to criticize things, but like, what are we doing? You know? If you want to talk shit about what's not being done, what are we doing that's having that level of impact? And can we do something that's having that level of impact? Because there's a lot of reasons why it's easier to get college students to be disruptive, but it can't be all on them. So that's why it's good that faculty are doing it too now. Thank you, New School faculty. All right, that's my bit.
And I think the fact that they are organizing like within themselves is probably the healthiest and best part of that, because I was actually listening to a talk on movements, and full disclosure, for some reason I was listening to one on libertarian movements. Yes, disgusting, I know. But one of the problems discussed with like a lot of libertarian movements is they were very top down. You know, we're gonna plan out and implement everything before we do anything, and if it doesn't work, oh God. Whereas a lot of these more organic movements, you know, start by going there and doing the thing they want to do and then working out all the issues as they go. And those tend to be the more sustainable ones because they can make mistakes. They can also make corrections very quickly because they need to. And they're not, you know, waiting for funding to be approved or, you know, investors and whatnot. And that's what makes it so cool to see these things happen organically in real time with these protests. So, like, good on y'all. You're figuring it out. We're proud of you.
Yeah, and I think that's a good lesson for like anything, including this podcast. Like, you don't have to know exactly every detail of how it's going to end up to just start something. You can like start things. Like, iterating on an idea doesn't have to be just like iterating in your head. You can like iterate it in the world and improve it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, we're so conditioned to think like, oh, I don't have the resources or the training or the education to be able to like have a place in XYZ.
Yeah,
Yeah, and
who am I to say anything, right?
Yeah, I think there's like a hyper focus on, I don't know. I'll keep talking about like nonprofit art spaces because that's where I'm at, probably in other professions too. But there's like a hyper focus on like qualification. And I think I also picked up, I think, some internalized things about Palestine specifically and qualification because there's so much like everyone wants to tell you you don't know enough. That like back in November when I was giving like talks with Layla about modern dance and Zionism, I was like, who am I to talk if I don't have a fucking PhD? Which is ridiculous. You don't need a PhD to figure out what's up. Like, and if it did, that would be like really disgusting that like something so gatekept by clearly fucked up institutions would be the baseline for political participation. Like, what kind of society would that be?
Kind of ours right now, but I'm also like I was also thinking it's like by the time I get a PhD in like protest and Palestinian studies, the genocide's going to be done. But then I'm like, on the other hand,
That's how they slow you down.
yeah, on the other hand, it's like, well, the Palestinians have lasted this long, but that's not a good thing. It's
Yeah,
it's
we can
like.
do things we don't we can do things that are more immediate than reading books. I also feel that way to an extent about the like I get a lot of kind of, I'm gonna say somewhere between encouragement and pressure to like, oh, speak through your art only. Art is resistance. And like, it's not that it's false. It's just kind of sus how much that like pops up when I'm about to do something else threatening, you know? Like, art is resistance, but like, so is building a barricade. And, also, I've gone on a rant lately about this, but like the presumptions people make about mental health that are, there's a lot of things that could be good or bad for your mental health in different directions depending on your circumstances. I feel like only the suggestions that make you less threatening get thrown in my face a lot. Like, in some ways, protest is traumatizing. In some ways, it's actually very good for my mental health because it's improving my sense of self-efficacy and releasing
Also,
cognitive dissonance. Yeah, what were you
sweet,
saying?
sweet catharsis.
Totally. And like it's a break from the cognitive dissonance that's like most workplaces where you have to like pretend like everything is fine. It, like things just kind of make sense. Like mentally things make sense when you're doing something like that. And yeah, honestly, like it can be suicide prevention, to feel like you have like your it's you can make change and everything you do isn't hopeless. And it can be traumatizing, you know, but also like doing art can be traumatizing too, and it can be taxing on your mental health. And in less intense ways, like having for all the ways that art can be healing, rehearsing on an external schedule that's like not going to match your emotional needs at any time is unlikely to be the exact type of emotional healing you need. Like in a lot of ways, I've had a much harder time mentally being in rehearsals than being at protests or direct actions lately. So I don't know. The whole like no focus on art for your mental health thing is just it's hitting funny, and it doesn't seem to be actually in tune with my emotional needs. And I wonder if people are just saying it to make me shut up, even if they don't know that, right? Even if the individuals aren't conscious of that's what the message is, there just seems to be something in that direction.
Even in these for-profit space that I occupy, we have a lot of sort of like feel-good, like I want to call them like feel-good initiatives, which are like, oh hey, let's celebrate diversity, or hey, we support the Ukrainians and we are no longer accepting any business from Russia. And I'm like, you mean after the State Department already banned you from doing it? Good job, Mark. You have taken a stand. I'm like, so Palestine, and that did not go well in that meeting. It's just like, it's like, no, it's like,
God.
it's just, But for profit corporation, not going to take a stand. Totally understandable. But
Nonprofits aren't better if it makes you feel better. I'm having just as much frustration.
I mean, I don't expect for profits to be better, but nonprofits seem to be very, very about, embracing that sort of leftist radical imagery. And especially now that
Yeah,
it's like, oh,
imagery.
we're, yeah, it's like now that we're like, now that, being queer isn't illegal anymore, and the stigma has been washed off after, roughly 20 years of progress, at least in America, kind of. But it's now like, okay, so what about doing something a little more proactive, like Palestine? Because, people actually dying in real time in large numbers because our government is cowards. Well, large parts of our government is cowards. It's like, why not, use your resources to, protest or make a statement or funds, distribute funds. And it's just like, oh, no, we don't want to do that. It's like, it's not our focus. Or I'm worried about these anti-BDS laws, or it's always, we want to do something, do better outreach. And it's like, okay, so do something that be proactive on something that isn't completely safe.
Yeah, it's pretty similar over here actually. With that, I could talk about Dancers for Palestine.
Please do.
Yeah. So Dancers for Palestine is an initiative that was started when different groups of people doing something related to dance in Palestine found each other. A group had started an open letter, and me and Layla had done a presentation. And Layla had also done her own presentations as well. Kind of found each other, found a couple additional people, and thought, what can we do with what we have, which is mostly contacts of people who signed the letter, as well as additional social networks. We started a lot focusing on promoting BDS, or specifically PACB, the Academic and Cultural Boycott, within dance nonprofits. We organized specifically a week-long boycott of Gibney, a dance center here, based on the funding they had received from the Israeli consulate. They're not the only one, but they were a place that we felt our base could have an impact on. We followed that up by picketing at their gala and then going across the street to hold our own gala, which had open mic performances, it had food. And we were raising money for Camps Breakers, which is a b-boy, b-girl crew in Gaza that has had their studio destroyed multiple times, had some of their young kids that they work with killed, and also raising money for our New York Palestinian youth movements. So that's an event we're working on, a political education town hall coming up. We've brought some contingents of dancers to marches. I'm also on the topic of anti-BDS law. We've also, well, I'll say this. Well, we've also been campaigning more generally besides like specific targets. We did a protest that targeted both Gibney and the Joyce Theater, which both have received funding from the Israeli consulate. Beyond those kinds of specific targeted things, we've also just been like reaching out to discuss PACB with dance institutions. There's kind of a toothless anti-BDS executive order in New York. It was passed in 2016. The text is very vague, but it's more about state investments in corporations than it is about, like, say, nonprofits receiving funding. But it basically says state entities need to withdraw investments from any entity that is promoting or supporting BDS. So, like, really scary text. It hasn't actually been used in any real way. There's a public blacklist involved, that the state entities need to specifically withdraw their investments from what's on this list. This list only includes 11 foreign corporations. Sorry, I'm getting technical, and that's because I've been writing explainers and letters and stuff. I
Oh
know
no,
people
somebody
in
who knows what they're
different
talking
states
about.
and don't care. Someone's like, I'm in Syria. Why should I care about this? Or like Vermont, or I don't know where. But
Texas.
yeah, Texas got bigger issues than this toothless law. Basically, it's toothless. No nonprofits are on this list. No local corporations are on that list. But nonprofits bring it up as something that could threaten their state funding if they were to sign PACT-B. To some extent, we can assure them that it hasn't happened. To another extent, the funding landscape isn't great lately. Everybody's scared about everything. So that's a challenge. I am starting a sign-on letter advocating for the repeal of that law, specifically to get nonprofit arts organizations in New York to sign on to. On some level, it's exactly what it sounds like, trying to get that law repealed. On another level, it's kind of giving a gateway drug, I'll say, into some level of commitment towards at least facilitating pro-Palestine activism. If you're not ready to sign on to BDS, and this is the reason you're giving, then by default you're saying this order is relevant to you. So would you consider signing on to repeal it?
That's so cool.
Yeah, just gotta get it done. Maybe by the time this episode comes out, it will be done.
I think this episode should come out today.
Perhaps. You need to make a graphic though and write a description.
Oh, okay, so maybe in a few days.
We're gonna have to rejoin the Zoom in a second, but when we come back,
Yeah.
Ellie, maybe you can talk. I think you're knowledgeable about and more severe anti-BDS laws in other states, so maybe we can come back and you talk about that.
Yeah, we'll be right back, everyone.
Cool.
Bye.
And we're back.
Hi.
We are. Hey, guys. Hey, y'all. So Ellie, do you want to talk about like what you know? I know you said you don't have like in-depth knowledge about it, but what's going on in other states?
Well, this is more like general stuff. I had a thing prepared, like I think it was like 2 weeks ago, but it's completely fallen out of my brain at this point. So, but in short, because of all the protests at Columbia and other places, a lot of states have started proposing a lot of anti-protest sort of laws and anti-BDS sort of laws that are vague or more intended to target student movements. So, for example, one of the things that's been happening as a result of the arrests is people have been setting up bail funds. This was also a thing during Black Lives Matter, but it's also a thing now. So, the powers of be have taken notice on that, and there's starting to be some chatter about laws to, stop bail funds from being a thing, which is basically criminalizing people who don't have bail money if they show up to protest. And
Yeah,
it's
I
like,
think
Jesus.
also like the whole concept is bail is fucked up, right? It means like there's a
Oh.
different punishment for people who have money and people who don't. Like, think about that. Like, what?
Oh yeah, there's a whole anti-bail movement that's actually been picking up some pretty good speed in a lot of cities, and some cities have started to abolish bail. Yeah. Like abolish bail, or at least abolish mandatory bail. Because it's been recognized that bail is usually just is either going to result in poor people being stuck in jail for 30 days and being resulting in like lost jobs, hurting their family situations, housing and rent, still are due, they don't get paused just because you go to jail. And so on and so forth. So, like, I mean, I'm very anti-bail, so I might be a tiny bit biased on this one, but the fact that they're
Good for you
targeting
then.
this, yeah, the fact that they're targeting bail as like one of the options to sort of stifle protest is pretty screwed up. And of course, BDS laws, anti-BDS, sorry, I keep saying BDS law, like, I mean like anti-BDS laws, are,
BDS law. A BDS law would just be a sanction.
yeah. I mean, okay, full disclosure, I am like always like half a thought away from saying anti-BDSM laws, and I'm like, okay,
I
back.
feel like they want to pass those too, though.
Do not put
I wonder
that
if they're
out
gonna
there.
make a package. They're
I
gonna make a
do not want
package
them
law.
screwing with people like that, but
Someone's
all
gonna like
right.
pass a package law that's like, you cannot direct funds away from Israel or do puppy play.
Okay, so one of the problems with these laws is usually when they are written, especially in response to protests and whatnot, they're usually pretty vague and are meant more to chill discussion rather than chill discussion, chill protest, and keep money out of the protest space, because it gives a lot of people pause. And vague laws, you can say, oh yeah, that's definitely unconstitutional, or you have some sort of legal person like, well, yeah, it's probably taking up to the Supreme Court, it's going to be found unconstitutional. But not everyone can, afford that sort of defense, and legal defenses in America cost money. And even if the state decides not to use it or decides to use it, that's a whole lot of anxiety and uncertainty for people who may not have the resources or time to, win that beautiful Supreme Court case. Although these days that sort of win is looking less and less likely because, conservative majority. But that is a whole separate other rant that is another thing that I could probably talk a little better about, but only because I've been watching way too much about the Trump trials.
Yeah.
Everyone looks sad all of a sudden.
Not all of a sudden. We're just kind of, I think we're still pretty sad at large. Does anybody have like positive
Sad
news
and
to talk
tired.
about? Not that you have to, but like just wondering, does anybody have something good?
Well, tied to just pro-Palestine resistance and everything, like Laylit, the last I hadn't been to Laylit. It's a party for anyone listening who doesn't know what it is. We've talked about it on the podcast. We've had a podcast at the event. Anyone living in New York listening to this knows what it is. I have zero doubt. But yeah,
But
the most
explain for us outsiders.
it's a SWANA centered just dance party, and it's a variety of music that is like, yeah, it's called Laylit. It is a bunch of different artists that are played, but there are specific DJs that usually are there. So there's DJ Safi, the founders, Phil and Nadim, who are amazing. They'll DJ too. I got to see Nadim at the latest Laylit, which it was so nice to see him. And I hadn't been in 4 years, and it was just a very uplifting night. There were so many queer Palestinians at the party, a lot of people with their keffiyehs. Some people were holding up signs, like pro-Palestine signs on the dance floor. So yeah, it was a really just cool additional kind of rally type of event. And it just happened to be at like 12 a.m. to 4 that all this was happening. So it was like kind of, it felt like a nighttime rally in a way. But yeah, there were no cops. We were in a venue. So,
Yeah, well, I
yeah.
guess that gives an opportunity for people who like are like high arrest risk
Yeah,
to feel like
exactly.
they're also at a rally in a sense.
Yeah, or like, yeah, people with maybe immigration status
Yeah.
issues or whatever. Just yeah, a lot of reasons that this was kind of a safe setting. But yeah, it was really nice, and I just want to give a big shout out to Laylit. Okay. Nadim and Phil, and I wish I had seen Phil. He was there, but it's grown. This party has grown so big. Like, it always had a really amazing number of people, but the venues have had to get bigger and bigger because of, like, this has really taken off even
Yeah.
more. So it was harder to find Phil.
I have a question. Do you feel like there's an like a larger number of like non-SWANA attendees of lately?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, I
I feel like
noticed
there's
that.
a like an influx of people who've like gotten involved in Arab culture through like the pro-Palestinian political
Yes.
movement, and there's like an influx there that's like participating in cultural events now too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that that might have to do with it. Yeah, it
I think
was a
well, also it's
very,
just also just grown over
yeah.
time, but I'm wondering like especially like this year and
Yeah.
if that's an
I'm
effect.
thinking that might be a factor, 'cause yeah, I saw a lot of like non-SWANA folks,
Yeah.
mostly POC, but
That's
yeah,
cool.
it was
That's
pretty
great. Yeah.
cool. Yeah, it was awesome. And just so cool to see, not it wasn't just people, like from what I could tell, people who are like from a the SWANA region
Yeah.
wearing keffiyehs and stuff, which was from
Cool.
what I could gather. Yeah,
Yeah.
there were a lot of like Latinx folks. Yeah, just it, yeah, it's definitely changed, and I think yeah, but it's still like the heart of it is still very much there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyone who is in New York or Montreal, they've been to DC. Anyway, if you haven't been, you should definitely follow their Instagram. It's Laylit, LAYLIT party. And you can just like kind of see where they'll be, what day. Yeah.
My good news is that it doesn't have to do with any of this. I tried acupuncture for the first time yesterday, and right after, or I guess the second time, but the first time I went to it like on purpose with a specific problem, versus just getting like a group discount in general. At first I was like, did it do anything? And I think my conclusion today is that I think it did something.
What?
Yeah.
I did not know that update. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm
Well,
so happy to hear
specifically,
that.
I don't know if this is interesting at all,
It is.
but
I really like acupuncture, so you could talk about this for a long
cool.
time.
Maybe you can explain this. So I'm having an issue in the back of my ankle, and then I don't know if this is related. A different part of my foot was feeling sore today, and in a way, I was like, oh, maybe that's good. Maybe it like moved the chi or something. Like, does that happen where like the thing, and it moved to a place where I'm like, I feel like it's easier to get it out of there. It's like the front of
Okay.
foot.
I
This
don't
is not
know.
a
Yeah.
scientific discussion at all, but
Not at all.
or
Disclaimer. We don't know what we're talking about.
even a
Yeah, I
an
don't know.
acupuncture type of
Yeah.
knowledge
I'm not
discussion.
sure. I'm not, but that's really interesting.
Yeah.
'Cause I mostly went for carpal tunnel, and like after maybe four sessions, I felt zero pain.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was having numbness, like from my, because I both type all day and am a violinist, so eventually I'm gonna get carpal tunnel,
Yeah.
and I did. And it was like numb from my hand all the way up to my shoulder, and that went away after a few sessions. I was just so lucky. But I didn't feel the pain like shift to different spots, but that's really interesting.
Yeah, it also just could be a coincidence that the other thing just started hurting.
Hey, I hope not. I hope it is because of that.
But the area and the main area felt better. Not totally, the pain isn't gone, but it is improved.
That's
And I just kind of
amazing.
wanted to know that it's working well enough that I should do additional sessions.
Yeah. Yeah,
Because
it's
like
not
I'm willing
cheap.
to pay for it if it's gonna do something, but not if it's
Yeah.
not.
No, it's not cheap and it's really hard to get it covered by insurance. I tried. And we submitted, or the acupuncture place submitted the paperwork to my insurance company like four times after we changed these tiny little things that the insurance company kept saying was like written incorrectly and blah blah blah. And then at the end, my insurance company was like, we won't cover it. So it's really hard to get that covered.
Yeah, I did not have insurance coverage on that. But I was
Yeah.
fortunate to have a bunch of people recommend like discount and sliding scale
Good.
services. By the way,
Good.
if you're ever like shadow banned and you need to get unshadow banned, and like a lot of your followers
Yeah.
are like dance people and queers, just be like, I've never done acupuncture. Do you have
Oh
any recommendations? And everybody shows up.
my God.
Everybody shows up.
That's a great tactic. Have you
I'll go like
tried, have you ever,
next time I'm in some like really deep hole, I'm gonna be like, hey, I don't have tattoos.
Oh yeah. Like, what do you think I should get? What should I get? Who do you recommend? Oh my God.
Those bait phrases that will get like any community out. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you tried acupuncture?
No, but I am a huge sucker for like a lot of massage and hot stone stuff, so I know I'm basic, but
I mean, that's a good thing. Those are good things.
yeah.
I keep wanting to try cupping. I have not tried that yet.
Once
Actually.
I let like in college, I let my friend do like DIY cupping.
But yeah, like, and full disclaimer for those people who are not into or not believers in alternative medicine, look, sometimes just having something done for yourself, even if it's not like 100% above board on the Western Medical Society, sometimes it just feels good. And, it feels good to take care of yourself. Sometimes that's what you can get. And
Yeah.
sometimes it works.
Yeah, and I'll say like, I mean, well, some things like maybe the effectiveness isn't proven. There's also so many things that are just uninvestigated by Western medicine that it's just not there to either prove or disprove it. Like the whole fascial system, there's so little investigated or like seriously
Yeah.
researched about it. That I don't know. There's probably a whole
Absolutely.
lot of shit going on there that's just
Probably.
not covered because
Yeah.
no one has gotten to that, I guess. That must be affected by just other forms of treatment. I think my line for like trying things is like, is the worst case nothing or is the worst case something terrible? Right? Like with chiropractic,
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have very negative chiropractic experiences. I don't know a
Yeah.
lot of people who have like negative acupuncture experiences. It's more like I try if they're it's not positive, it's just like I tried it, it didn't really do anything for me. So I can
Yeah.
deal with that for a try.
That's a good point.
Fair.
I had a chiropractor once who had me watch a video for like an hour, and then she charged the copay was like $300. She did,
Jesus.
and she did, yeah, and she did no chiropractic stuff on me that session, but she charged for me to just watch an informational video at her clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, it was, I think we disputed it. I don't remember the specifics, but it was just like, I don't know. I know,
Why can't we have laws against
yeah.
that instead of laws against BDS and Bail?
I know. And but as a baby or as a 1-year-old, a chiropractor totally changed the course of my life by correcting something on my hip that
Yeah.
was making me walk like really lopsided and stuff. So I won't make this blanket statement about chiropractors, but I've
Yeah.
had like, yeah, it's like you said, it's like a big hit or miss versus acupuncture. The miss is not doesn't seem to be very extreme.
Yeah. Unless someone
But
wasn't sanitizing needles or something, but that's not like
that's
common.
true. Yeah.
my main problem is a lot of these practitioners, there's always like the good-hearted, fully invested folks who are about it and about doing their best, but there's also like in the less regulated industries, it's just basically a lot of room for like, scammy and shitty people, and
Yeah. Yeah.
it's like I don't want to come down as all I know. It's like I know I'm like I am literally a product of Western medicine at times, but I'm also like let's not like gatekeep things that might work for people, but it's great. I feel like we're falling into one of the great sins of podcasts is giving medical opinions on stuff we shouldn't, but that's just
That's
me.
true. That's true. That's true. I guess what I'll say about the last thing I'll say about that is like, but also I've had some shitty doctors that
Oh, I
went
have a
through my
lot
AKEP
of
system.
shitty
So, I
doctors.
don't know. Maybe it doesn't
Yeah.
matter.
I wish I could get those copays back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Oh, can I talk about something real quick?
Yeah, you can talk about
That's
something
like,
as long as you want. It's a podcast.
no, I know, but I don't want to like get too into details.
Okay.
But I just want to say we had a really good friend who it has turned out is transphobic. And I have not talked about this on the podcast at all, but we were really close for like 2 years, I don't know, something like that, more than that. And I just want to say, like, you never know with people, so be careful.
Yeah.
And like,
And
and this person profits quite a bit from the queer community. So.
well, the whole anti-trans movement has been picking up a lot of steam lately. I kind of blame the elections for that.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if I blame the elections because it's like international. I guess you can blame a lot of different elections, but
yeah. And this
yeah.
thing, this friend who's no longer a friend and blocked us, this happened like a year and a half ago. No, like even more. So it wasn't even around elections.
It's like I said, it's been sort of like the hot topic of the last couple of years, the whole trans air quotes debate. And
Yeah.
it's like I know this is basically southern strategy using southern strategy tactics just so you can hate on queer people without saying queer people. And it's
Yeah,
like
it's also like they just pick like from legislation, you'd think like all trans people really want to play sports.
Yeah.
I
You
mean,
think
here I
that's
am,
like
like
the main activity.
Yeah.
it's like we're targeting like the few trans people who okay, so there's a stereotype in the trans community that I see myself in and a lot of people like me in is nerdy, introverted, computer slash tech centric, and kind of adverse to the outdoors. This is not true of everyone, but it is kind of. And
But all the news is about like trans athletes.
yes, and I'm like, you're targeting the one segment of my community that is trying to live their best and healthiest lives through athleticism, and
My God. Yeah.
it's like you're punishing people's good habits. Stop.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, this person has really caused me to feel not welcomed or ex just, I don't know, just like really uncomfortable in Arab spaces in this city, in New York City, places like spaces that I w am interested in, like music spaces. This person is constantly involved and showing up. And it's so frustrating when someone can like that can push people out. But keep people out of shit.
And like
Just
I've
frustrated.
experienced this too, where like theoretically you can be all like, no, I have just as much of a right to be there as they do. I'm gonna go and
Yeah.
assert myself and they can feel uncomfortable, but you don't actually know how you're gonna feel emotionally when you're there. And you
Yeah.
just end up feeling like shit. And then you don't wanna go around, like you can't make yourself not feel like shit.
Yeah, and
It's
that
not always in your control. And
exactly.
yeah.
And what you're talking about right now, that specific incident is kind of what showed me, like, no, you can't just turn off those feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, this was so out of nowhere, but like it's just been bothering me again lately because there's this event coming up that I'm like, well, they're probably gonna be there. I don't wanna show up.
Yeah.
Social circles are hard, and queer social circles are especially hard just because they're so small. It's like,
Yeah.
crap, I
Yo,
know
can I
that
say
guy.
something a little bit unformulated but important?
Yeah. I mean, that's
Okay.
kind of our brand.
It's totally. How? This is not entirely on the top. This is adjacent to the topic
Yeah.
that you brought up. Everybody wants to talk about like accountability processes and restorative justice within community circles, especially when it relates to like, I don't know, like sexual assault is a place that comes up a lot. And
Yeah.
I'll like cite anti-carceral feminist theory. And I don't know that I need to read more theory. I want somebody to talk me how they've done this effectively. Because I just haven't seen a lot of examples.
Me
And
neither.
I don't mean this as this isn't like a rhetorical thing, like show me how you did this effect. Though this is actually like, could anybody like walk me through how they've done this effectively?
Yeah.
With like examples of like multiple degrees of severity? Because like sometimes I'll see an example, but it's like the most manageable example you can possibly think of, and a lot
Yeah.
less severe than the things that are actually happening in our circles.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like I actually I don't know, like I'm actually very about like nobody's disposable and all that stuff, but like how are you actually doing this in a way that doesn't make people pushed out of
Yeah.
circles for being harmed
No.
or victimized, you know?
And that's hard for me to understand still. Yeah, like you said, without examples, 'cause like like if I have a grudge, I'll hold it forever, and it's like you it's true. It's like if someone fucks up like that badly, I'm like, you're on my list. You're
Yeah,
on my
somebody's written
list. You're
it
my
that
enemy list. Like,
Yeah,
oh yeah,
see,
I've
that's
always been in
a
awe of
personality
your enemy
difference.
list.
And I respect that about you. I don't have a lot of energy for enemyships. Like people who fuck me over, like I legitimately do want them to like heal and be better people, but like far away from me.
Yeah.
I don't want like any involvement in that.
Well, that's the sort of like that's the sort the you know contrasting viewpoint. It's like on the one side,
Yeah.
nobody is owed forgiveness and acceptance back into a community that they've offended. But on the other hand, if that's not an option available, then what? Why do they have? Do they have ever any incentive to get better or to do better?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like that. It's like.
Yeah. Like this transphobic person, it's been long enough where I'm like, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
wasn't thinking about that or transphobia in particular, just more. I mean, this is an example of like people being harmed in like community spaces, and it just made me think about
Oh,
other instances, especially with like relationship abuse or
yeah.
sexual assault and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially, I don't know, like especially we got communities where like people are like deeply fucked up and dumping their
Right.
trauma on each other. And that's a very negative way to put it, but it's also kind of true. Like,
It is true.
yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
to be fair, there are certain communities online which I have just pieced out of because they either got too trauma dumpy, which, like, I'm not saying they don't deserve a space to do it. It's just like I can't deal with that in my regular social media diet without like without kind of feeling the doomerism myself. So I kind of like peace out of those. But it's also like it's like you
Yeah.
can't, alternatively, you can't always just be in, you know, positive spaces because, you know, that whole toxic positivity is definitely a thing. And I guess it's for
So,
everyone's for finding the balance.
if
At
anybody
least.
has like examples, they can give me like a play by play of how they're dealing with things like that. Not just a framework, like they filled in the blanks. Hit us up.
Hell, it might be a good episode.
Might be a
Please.
good episode.
Yeah,
Wait, I want to
I'm
throw out
gonna.
another thing,
Yeah.
another underformulated but important thing, which is not related to that at all, but is related to the episode and other topics in the episode.
Yeah.
Boycotting the UAE. I've been seeing like independent people, like at call for boycott of the UAE, specifically like tourism. With regards to the weapons that the UAE is providing to the RSF, which is like fueling the genocide in Sudan. So like calls that are just like Sudanese individuals, but just like an individual, not anything concerted. As somebody who wasn't really planning on vacationing in Dubai anyway, is there something more concerted or like organized regarding this? And I don't mean this as like a rhetorical question, like why isn't there anything more concerted? I actually mean like if somebody's organizing something more comprehensive,
Yeah.
you let me know about it. I'd like to learn more and be supportive of it. And like I know like Palestinian BDS like developed over many years, and this is a time of crisis and stuff, but I don't know. In general, there's like a difference between like somebody saying boycott something and an organized boycott movement, and I'm wondering if
Yeah.
ladder is developing.
Also, we'd
Yeah,
like to talk about that. You could be a podcast episode. Just
yeah,
saying.
yeah,
That'd be
totally.
really interesting.
But like,
I
if it exists and stuff,
I guess we have to see
could
like if this does exist first.
like brainstorm it here
Then,
on this
yeah.
podcast.
Yeah. I should probably sleep. It's like
Okay.
hitting, yeah.
but something hit me just now.
All right. I guess this is the first time we're gonna end the
Oh.
podcast because Ali is too sleepy to continue.
All right, outro. You can find us at thequeerarabs.com, the Queer Arabs on Instagram and Twitter. Are we still on Twitter? Kind of.
Yeah.
And
We
Facebook.
exist on Twitter, but it's more at this point, it's just kind of a placeholder, I believe.
It's just to post our episodes. And
And
Facebook even we have.
true.
Yeah.
And you can email us at thequeerarabs@gmail.com.